Northampton Saints fullback George Furbank has had quite the 12 months. Just under a year ago, January 20th, 2020 to be exact, he received his first call-up to the England squad for the Six Nations, before making his debut against France for Eddie Jones's side. After that rapid rise to the international setup, he has become one of the players to watch. But of course this last year has been anything but smooth, thanks to a certain global pandemic. To sum that up, the day we recorded this episode, our first show of 2021, George was on his final day of self-isolation after a positive COVID test, one of many positives that led to Northampton Saints temporarily having to close things down. That's just one of a number of frustrations that many of us are finding ourselves living with now that we're back in the third national lockdown. On this episode of the podcast, George tells us what it's been like having to juggle sport with all things pandemic, but he also tells us about his own development as a player, from starting out to that whirlwind call-up to the England team. And as an ambassador for the Mintridge Foundation, he is someone who knows all too well what the power of sport can do. With kids across the country now facing homeschooling again, physical exercise can't be pushed to the side as a result of that. It's still vitally important. George, thank you for taking the time to chat to us on the show today, and welcome to the podcast as well. This is the first episode we've done since we all ended up back in lockdown 3.0, whatever you want to call it. So ultimately, how are things now that we're all living with these restrictions again in our lives?
Yeah, I mean, we're quite lucky, I guess, in compared to a lot of people, in the fact that we are still allowed to go and train and do our jobs. Unfortunately, we obviously had a few positive cases at Northampton the other week. I was one of them. So it's been an interesting 10 days. Pretty dull 10 days, and the club's kind of been shut down as well. So boys not been there these last few weeks, but kind of looking forward to kind of getting out. It's my last day today. Come on. So I'm looking forward to getting out of the house again, getting back training.
Yeah, nearly at the end of the road in terms of self-isolation. How was it when you found out that you were positive? Because did you not have a false positive like way back at the start of this as well?
No, my housemate had a false positive.
Okay.
But same sort of thing anyway, as in I would have had to isolate. So, mm-hmm. I wasn't too concerned. Obviously, like, people have been having symptoms in various sort of ways. But it's more frustrated than anything, I guess, because you know you're going to be out of action for a couple of weeks, and you're going to be sat aside for a couple of weeks. So I guess it's more of a frustrating thing than worry so much about my health. And I've been lucky, I guess, in a sense that it's not really affecting me. I've not really had any symptoms. So that's been nice. Been able to keep busy, not be stuck in my bed.
Mm-hmm. And in terms of being sat inside as well, delve into anything to keep yourself occupied? Any hobbies that you've stumbled upon?
I've got a darts board up in my garage, so I've been playing quite a lot of darts. Started reading again, playing chess, doing uni work. So, yeah, I mean... I've got plenty of activities that I'm interested in to keep me busy, so that's good.
Mm-hmm, definitely. With, well, obviously COVID is kind of dictating a lot of our lives at the moment in one way or another, particularly for Saints, as you've alluded to, with what's happened in the last couple of weeks. And you talked about that frustration there. How do you kind of manage that with, you know, there's obviously the self-isolation from your perspective, but I suppose the general disruption to your season at the same time, having to get used to all these new regulations at various timelines throughout this pandemic, but also just, I suppose, is it always in the back of your mind as well that, you know, a game that might be scheduled might actually not be happening when you think it's going to be happening?
Yeah. I guess the overall thing is emotion is sort of frustration at times, just like just small, like small petty things that shouldn't annoy you, but do annoy you, and you're like why has this got to be like this? And obviously games being cancelled and things like that are frustrating, but ultimately, like, we're all very grateful that we're still allowed to do what we do. And there's a lot of people who obviously having to work from home now, or have lost jobs, or like have been affected in various ways. So we're grateful for the fact that we can actually go back to training and play games still. But yeah, there's frustration, different levels of frustration at different times, with all the sort of different things going on.
Mm-hmm. How, in terms of, I don't know, mentally building yourself up to perform, have you had to adjust anything this year, considering what's been happening?
I guess the big difference has been obviously having no crowds at stadiums. So when you have crowds at stadiums, you get that whole sort of buzz as you walk into the stadium, and then when you're warming up and during the game, and that kind of, yeah, you, a lot of players feed off that, and that gives you a lot of the adrenaline, a lot of the buzz. So that's sort of dealing with that has been, yeah, a little bit different. I mean, I've not changed anything to specifically in my routine as such. But it's just, yeah, learning to sort of deal with the fact that it's going to be very, very quiet in a stadium has been weird, yeah.
Yeah, always the longevity of it as well that I've, I suppose, particularly found quite tough, knowing that this is going to go on for months more. Even right back at the start, I think we kind of knew it was going to go on for a while. Does that play on your mind as well as athletes, that I think you know it's not going to snap back to how it was anytime soon?
Yeah, a little bit, but... Yeah, I mean, like I said, at the same time, we still are allowed to train and play. So, I mean, we'd love crowds back in, and that would make a huge difference to loads of people, especially to the people who are big fans and want to come to the games as well. I mean, that would cheer them up no end, I'm sure. But yeah, it's frustrating, the longevity of it, and the fact that we don't know exactly when this is going to end, when we're going to get crowds back in, when things are going to go back to normal. So, yeah, the unknown is frustrating.
Yeah, definitely the unknown. But hopefully with, you know, vaccines, etc., there is some sort of light at the end of the tunnel as well. We mentioned this just before we start recording. It's going to be nigh on, 5 weeks by the time Saints get to play again, since the last game that Saints got to play. Does that affect the general mood around the club when there's sort of that giant gap without being able to do what you do best ultimately?
Other than probably a build-up of testosterone.
mix as well.
I don't think so too much. I mean, like, we train and we do put all the work so we can ultimately perform and play on a weekend. Like, that's what we love doing. So not having that it's not been enjoyable. And obviously the club's been closed down for a bit, so boys have not been training and stuff like that. So, I mean, I guess in the year, in fact, Europe's now been postponed as well. We've got a couple of weeks, hopefully positive cases dwindle and we'll have a couple of weeks back in training and some good prep towards Gloucester.
Yeah, definitely. We often focus a lot on how restrictions and things affect stuff on the pitch. But what about off the pitch as well, when, you know, everyone else has their own lives to live, you have a housemate as well. And, you know, it's not as easy as just sealing yourself off in this bubble, is it? Has that been tough to manage?
Yeah, I guess. The things that have been tough is just sort of everything else being closed down. Well, not being able to see family to start as much as I'd like. Start off with has been difficult. But I've been catching up over calls and stuff like that, and they popped some shopping over and things like that. So I have seen them from time to time. But yeah, so that's been weird. And then just kind of everything being closed down. So everything that you would normally do after a day's training, we go for a coffee together. Any sort of socialising outside the club has been restricted. Which is, I guess, a big part of being a team. Like you enjoy those moments together as much as you enjoy playing on the pitch together. And they're part of that sort of bond that you get. You do as much off the field as you have on. So not having that has been weird. That's sort of something I'm really looking forward to getting back to again.
Mm-hmm. Does that almost go under the radar somewhat? Because I think it's something I've heard before,
mainly when a new player comes in, for example, during this period, and they don't get that social opportunity to become part of the team in the same way as it was before. I don't know if that is something that we focus so much on the performance side of things, we forget what actually makes a team, and that's a large part of it.
Yeah, that is a massive part of it, and it's a big focus, I guess, it's probably of many teams, is that stuff off the field that you do. So when you're on the field, you have a bond and you have the trust around you. Yeah, I mean, you'd have to speak to someone who's come into the club who's been new during this period to fully understand what it's been like. I can speak for them, but I mean, we've tried as much as we can to sort of make that bond in the changing rooms and stuff and on the training field, but I can imagine it's been a lot harder than it usually would be if things were normal.
Yeah, definitely. Is there anything you found particularly challenging? Obviously, you've mentioned the social contact and things like that there, but whether it's just sometimes the isolation, sometimes the wanting to do something but not being able to, and having that to overcome that mental block, I suppose.
I guess I've probably been quite lucky in the fact I've not found it too challenging. I found it frustrating at times, like I said, just with all the sort of things going on. Frustrating. I've not found it too challenging. I mean, the biggest challenge is I've got a girlfriend who lives out in the Netherlands, so I've not really been able to see her very much over the last year, which has been really crap. But other than that, like I've not faced too many big challenges. I mean, our life has not changed as much as many people. So I kind of wake up and go to training and come back at 4 o'clock in the afternoon, get all my uni work and have dinner and chill out in the evening. And for during the week, most of my days look like that. So I've been able to do my week pretty much normally. I guess it's the sort of days off and things like that where you notice it more. Where you'd normally, I guess, go for breakfast, hang out with your mates, play golf, all that kind of stuff. Those sort of things have changed, which I guess have been the biggest challenge.
Yeah, I think we're all very much used to our new routines, if you like. It's all kind of settled that way. As speaking as one of the working from home brigade now, yeah. I've been doing it for quite some time. Something I wanted to touch on, and I wonder if this is something that plays on athletes' minds at all, maybe not play on minds, but it's something there in the back of your mind right now. Do you feel there's sort of added pressure on you and other sports people to give people some escapism right now?
I wouldn't say added pressure, like we're just doing what we're doing and hopefully we can bring enjoyment to people who aren't able to go to grounds and people love sport, and sport has a massive impact on like thousands and millions of people's lives. So the fact that we're still allowed to do that and hopefully bring joy to joy and frustration at times probably with our form, to our fans is, I don't think there's added pressure with that. I guess that's just like it's the same as it normally is for us. I wouldn't say it plays on my mind anyway.
Yeah, and you mentioned the form there, for example. Again, is that when you have these big breaks through no fault of your own and you want to try to correct that or put things right and try and get a bit more consistency going, that must play a part in it as well when you've got to juggle all of these other aspects at the same time.
Yeah, that was tough. I mean, getting our first one home for a while against Worcester, we played okay. And that's when you kind of want to take yourself on a bit of a run and hopefully back up a win with another couple of wins. And the fact that the next three or four games after that have been cancelled has not allowed us to do that, which is frustrating. So, I mean, hopefully we can get a good couple of weeks training in and hopefully bring some of that form from Worcester into Gloucester.
Yeah, definitely. And hopefully, I think a lot of people are just craving for a little bit of momentum going in all of our lives, really.
This podcast is a member of The Bear, internet radio and podcast network. Find more great podcasts at thebear.live.
Moving on then to sort of focusing on yourself and your own development as a player and a person, what do you think is the biggest difference in you as a player now compared to when you first played for Saints?
I mean, it's going to sound like a very standard answer, but my ability to communicate well. I think when you first come into a team, no matter what your game understanding is, you're always probably a little bit nervous to sort of have your say and feed in information as much as possible to other playmakers. And now, sort of I've had a string of games. I'm probably a lot more confident in that area, and trust that my game understanding is good enough that I'm have confidence in feeding sort of that information into other players.
Is that almost like, I suppose, you feeling a little bit like the baby of the group at the start and then maturing into, I don't know, the teenager of the group?
Yeah, I think so, yeah. I'll put it like that.
If we're going for some sort of analogy.
Yeah.
Most of the time as well, professionally, you've been a fullback, but was it end of last month in the Champions Cup, you played at fly half, or filled in the fly half, rather. How was that, and what kind of things do you pick up when you're playing different positions compared to what you're normally playing at?
Yeah, I mean, I played fly half a lot when I was younger, sort of growing up. That was my position, and then slowly moved. I mean, I kind of played everywhere in the back line for
further and further back.
Yeah, and then ended up at 15. So I guess a lot of the skills you have at 15 are very similar to those at 10. The difference at 10 being you sort of got to control a game more. And manage your forwards more, and probably be a bigger voice in the team. So I guess that's probably the main difference. But in terms of skill set, there's not too much different. Especially the way I play fullback and slowing into that 10 position. I enjoy it. I really enjoy it, to be honest. It's a little bit different, but you're more involved, I guess, which makes it more enjoyable as well.
Does that almost feed into the development side of things that you were talking about before, where you feel like you can have more of a voice? And it's almost like, not exclusively, but having more of a voice and more of a control on the pitch. And then maybe comes a little bit more with that added experience that you're picking up.
Yeah, potentially. I mean, at 10, you don't really have a choice, do you? Like, if you're quiet, the most...
It's all going to fall apart.
Yeah, it's going to fall apart. So, being at 10, you don't have a choice. Choice with that. So I guess, you can put that down as part of the development, and playing there gives you then more confidence to have that voice when you're playing in other positions.
Mm-hmm. This might have been something that you have been asked about before, but I don't know if you ever, would you ever see yourself playing more fly half in the future, or is it very much take it as it comes, have to play wherever?
More take it as it comes, to be honest. I really enjoy playing fullback, but I'm happy to slot in at 10 when we've got some class 10s at the club, so my game time at 10 is probably going to be very limited, unless there's injuries. But I guess it's hopefully it's good for Chris that I can slot in there if we have a few injuries and we don't have to bring someone in.
Mm-hmm, definitely. We'll talk about England more specifically later on. But that experience of becoming part of the setup to playing, did that change you as a player as well when you get brought into that for the first time?
I guess I wasn't it changed me as a player, but I guess it opened my eyes to sort of what these world-class players do day in, day out, the levels they train at, their stuff off the pitch, how professional they are. It opened my eyes a little bit more to what I can be doing extra that's going to help me get to that level.
Is that more of a mindset thing that it's kind of opened your eyes to?
Probably a little bit mindset, and then just, I guess, the main one was sort of the ability to look after your body, because ultimately you're a performance athlete, and the more you can come to training every day and be your best physically as well as mentally, you're going to give yourself more of a shot to play well, get picked, and then B, play well on a weekend. So finding different ways to sort of do that and prep myself so every day I'm kind of coming in feeling renewed and fresh as much as possible, that's going to help me. So that was a big learning experience.
Was that something that, changed then afterwards? More, I don't know if it was like a nutrition standpoint or just the way you, you know, you were warming up or preparing during the week. Is there a specific example for something that you've kind of picked up from that period?
Probably just my recovery. So I looked at sort of Johnny May and George Ford in particular, who spend hours on their body in terms of, well, A, prepping, and B, all that recovery stuff, so they can come back feeling good the next day. And I guess I probably wasn't doing as much of that as I should have, and I don't exactly have the most robust body. So sort of seeing that, like I said, opened my eyes and has allowed me to learn and bring that back to the club, and hopefully maintain that whilst I'm at the club as well. Mm-hmm.
That journey to playing for England as well, is it fair to call it a whirlwind? I might call it a whirlwind because it was a rapid rise, I think it's fair to say.
Yeah.
Take us through sort of the journey playing in your school years and playing different sports as well, and what's that sort of given you as an athlete, and kind of sums up where you're at today.
Yeah, so I guess I was always sort of a sporty kid. I was always outdoors. You can ask my parents, I was always outdoors, chucking around a cricket ball, rugby ball, playing with a football. I was really sporty and got into rugby in particular at a young age. And I guess being at a school that didn't play rugby for most of my time also helped me chuck me into other sports. So when I was at Kimbolton, played cricket, hockey and football were the three sports that I played. And then on a Sunday, we'd go play for Huntingdon for the mini teams there. So being involved in a wide variety of sports, I guess it can only benefit you, really. I think it's probably helped my rugby. What helps hand-eye coordination, learning to be part of a team, different skills that you can learn. I'm pretty grateful that, well, my parents didn't push me, but I'm grateful that I was as an outdoorsy kid, and that my parents were really keen for that and helped me, helped me do what I do in doing sports. So obviously then moving to Bedford School, where they did play rugby, my focus sort of that age then became rugby. I'm still massive into my cricket. I'm still play cricket at the school. But once obviously the rugby started at Saints, that kind of had to stop. I still, to be fair, I still, when I can in the summer, go and play some cricket. I do miss that. And obviously you've interrupted me watching the first test in Sri Lanka.
Yeah. Was it 135? They're all out. Sri Lanka. Those transferable skills, because it's something that we've kind of heard a lot on this podcast when we're talking to athletes about how they've tried all these different sports when they're growing up. Does that almost put you in a better position than if you had, say, if you had had rugby at that school when they didn't, and you'd focus solely on rugby? Are you in a better position now, having tried all these different things?
I couldn't tell you definitely. I don't have an answer for that. I guess you'd have to do some sort of social experiment to
research,
to actually find the answer for that. But I think I'm grateful that I was able to do all those other sports. I mean, I guess if I did rugby at school from a young age, potentially I'd have been better at an early age at rugby. I mean, that's one thing I could say. But no, I'm grateful in a way that we didn't, because, I don't know, I guess if I played rugby at school and at club from the age of sort of 5 or 6, come my age, do you get fed up of it? I guess, I mean, I've always had love for it, and I've always played it low, so I don't think that would have really affected me. But I think those transferable skills are massive, and bringing those into rugby, it doesn't help your rugby game understanding, but it just helps, like, it's just a general sort of sporting understanding of what's going on. I think that helps.
I suppose those initial building blocks, that base layer, if you like, to then going on to focus on something.
Yeah.
Going on to play for Saints then, and obviously the England call-up then comes along, and you said before how much of a shock that was when it did come along. Were you still in that sort of feeling like the baby of the group stage for Saints when that came along?
I guess, but the thing that helped me, I guess, with Saints was the fact that a lot of people my age were sort of coming through at the same time. So I was playing with a lot of boys that I'd played with since I was sort of 15, 16. So yeah, in a way you are feeling like the baby when you're playing with like Courts and Tom Wood and Alex Waller and people like that. But at the same time, you've got those young, other young boys alongside you. So yeah, you are probably the baby in the squad, but having those people around, I guess pushes you a little bit more to that teenager stage.
Yeah, definitely. And I think this is something I've heard a few footballers talking about anyway, is that there's nothing better than winning or playing with the people that you've grown up with. Does that ring true for you as well, when, like you say, you're coming through with all these players at the same sort of age?
Yeah, 100%. There was actually a question on the Q&A that I answered yesterday, that was, what's your happiest memory in rugby? I answered it's the win when we won the Premiership Cup is probably my happiest memory, just because the fact that a lot of that team were boys I played with since I was younger, and then to go on and play senior rugby with them and then to win a trophy with them was awesome.
So I suppose that's what, when you're at that young age, that's what, and you're talking with everyone, that's what you dream of.
Yeah,
exactly. Has become true. It's just like the best feeling.
Yeah, pretty special.
Stepping up to international rugby, and we've obviously talked about the nutrition side of it or the recovery side of things as well. In terms of playing, what's the big differences? Because I think a lot of it probably goes without saying, but for you landing in that team, what are the big things that you've learned?
I guess it becomes more physical is one thing. It's probably more of a tactical game. Errors become bigger, so if you make an error, the consequences become greater. They're probably the three big things.
Do you feel more how do I put it? I suppose under the spotlight, if we go for that, and then does managing that pressure that goes along with that spotlight, does that then become sort of a skill that you have to master at the same time?
Yeah, I mean, naturally, you do become more in the spotlight. Obviously, you're playing for your country, so you've got a lot more viewers than you would playing on a weekend for your club. You've got more media talking about the games and stuff like that. So, yeah, naturally, you become more in the spotlight. And there's a psychologist there at England, and that's something that we spoke about together. So being able to deal with that is a challenge, especially when, like, the quickness that I started playing for Saints and then went to England, I guess I never really sort of recognized that properly. So being able to sit down and chat with her was interesting.
Did that almost, I suppose, we talked about the whirlwind, but it goes so fast that you maybe didn't have the time originally to think about it and work out how you're going to deal with it?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, until you're in that situation, it's hard to know how you are going to deal with it. Like, it could have been something you just take your stride and you find natural. It could be something that you hate and you really struggle with. So I guess until you put yourself in that situation, you're never going to know. But then as soon as you are in that situation, developing different ways to deal with it is important.
In terms of the players and Eddie Jones and the coaching staff as well, how does it feel like getting plucked into that group, you know, a lot of established stars there at the same time, and essentially trying to integrate yourself into being one of the team?
Yeah, I guess I sort of felt like I did when I first joined Saints, and at Saints I was around people who I'd looked up to growing up as like rugby heroes. So I guess you're then put into that, into the England fold where you've got guys again who you've looked up to massively. And so, yeah, firstly being around them and meeting them was awesome, and then to learn off them and learn how the whole England setup and how training and all that kind of stuff works was pretty special.
It's just, again, in your head saying or telling you, don't say something stupid.
Yeah.
That's what I would be like if I was in that position.
Don't make yourself look like a fool. Yeah.
So long as that didn't happen, then that's all fine.
Well, I hope it didn't. So other people might tell you different, I don't know.
Fingers crossed anyway. How do you look back on those initial international appearances? And does it kind of leave you, well, I presume it obviously leaves you hungry for more of the same, so you build build from that.
Yeah, it does. Yeah, I mean, like, obviously I look back on it with massive pride. To be able to play for my country was something I wanted to do from a young age. It was sort of a dream come true. So I look back on it with massive pride. And like you said, it kind of gives you that hunger that you know you can get there. So it gives you that hunger to then push for more.
What was the biggest surprise for you from that period?
Biggest surprise? It probably was, to be honest, like we just spoke about, that sort of media spotlight that gets put on you. I guess being a face that probably wasn't expected to be called up, and then being called up, and then a face that probably wasn't expecting to play too much rugby in the Six Nations, so then going and starting the first game, you're like, Jesus, okay, like there's a lot of people talking, and so that was probably the biggest surprise. Although I maybe expected it a little bit, it was still a surprise for me.
Is it almost the, I suppose, the sheer weight of the attention at the same time? Because I can't say I've ever been in that position, but I suppose if you happen to have Googled your name, for example, then suddenly there's article after article about you, analysing you, and that must be just a completely different ball game to what it was before that you then.
I guess I don't really like searching for things. I think if you go searching, it's never gonna turn out well. But even so, you've got friends and family messaging you saying, "Oh, this has been written. All this has been." You're like, "Stop telling me." I guess I did my best to sort of avoid all that stuff. But I think naturally, it was always going to filter through.
That's something that we've touched on with a few athletes so far. And I know everyone's got their different takes to not just the media, but also how you use social media for sort of the same reason as well. Because obviously it's a lot easier if you're a prolific user of Twitter, for example, to have those articles thrust in your face.
Yeah.
And almost temptation becomes a bit too much and you want to read it. How's your relationship with social media in that regard? Is it something that you kind of like to take a step back from when you want to really focus? Or is it something you like to have the opportunity to use and maybe use more in the future? I don't know.
Yeah, like you said, it depends on circumstance. I guess if I'm going into England camp, I'll probably take a step back from it, just because there's obviously that bigger spotlight in there. I do like using it. I mean, I've got a time limit on it to stop me overusing it, stop me lying in my bed and scrolling. But I do enjoy using it. I'm not sure what purpose for, but I guess Twitter, I find out a lot of information from Twitter. Instagram, you can't give reasons why you actually use it. I can't anyway. I mean, it doesn't generate you, well, especially in the stage that I'm at, it's not generating any income or anything like that. So I just use it out of, like, I enjoy scrolling through times. I'm cautious of how much I actually do use it.
Yeah, because it's, from the people we've spoken to, it just differs from person to person, I find. Some people find it as like a nice bit of escapism if they're in the middle of a tournament, for example, whereas others just step back completely, don't need it in their lives. Yeah. So it is kind of interesting to see how, particularly with all the conversation at the moment about how social media can be used by various different people, it's something that plays a large part in our lives, whether we like it or not.
You're listening to Sportspiel, the Players Podcast.
This is the question that usually gets people thinking. What's the biggest challenge you faced in rugby?
In rugby? You're right, it's going to get me thinking.
It usually does.
I guess I've kind of been lucky in terms of not had too many setbacks or anything like that. To be honest, it's probably more recently, putting together a few poor games back to back after the first lockdown, where I wasn't playing at the level I wanted to play at, I've only played sort of 30 games for Saints, so I'd not really had that where I'd put like one, two, three poor games back to back. And before that, I was playing at school and things. So I guess if you had one bad game, you can kind of put it to the back of your mind because it doesn't really matter. It's school rugby. So having those sort of back-to-back games and DBM to deal with that and try and bring back some form again is probably been my biggest challenge.
And then the follow-up to that, how do you overcome that when it's... The momentum side of things as well, because we always talk about how important momentum is, isn't it? But if it's momentum going in the opposite trajectory to where you want it to go, it's always tough to, regardless of what you're doing, to switch it back going the other way.
So for me, working on things in training, really hammering things in training that weren't going so well, to give me confidence going into a weekend that I've done all I can in training. So I know that it should happen on a weekend, and then sort of just having a sort of I can't say it without swearing. Sort of having just a sort of let go mentality, and just trying to be relaxed. Just be like, look, you put some poor games together, so you've not really got anything to lose. Just go into this game relaxed, enjoy yourself. And bring, like, because I play my best rugby when I'm enjoying myself. So if I can do my best to relax going into a weekend, and know play with a smile on my face, then I'm hopefully gonna have a good game.
It's almost going back to that frustration you mentioned at the start, just letting that go and trying not to let it rule your body.
Exactly, because it can build up and build up and build up, and that's kind of what it was starting to feel like. I was putting more pressure on myself, I guess. I couldn't give you a magic way of being able to do that, being able to let go. Being able to do that, if you can find a way to do that, is only going to help.
Mm. If there was a magic way to do it, we'd be a rich man. That kind of moves on really to my next point about sort of the power of sport and what it can do for people, something you obviously know and have seen firsthand with the Mintridge Foundation, your role as an ambassador. This is a very open question, so feel free to make of it what you like, but what does the power of sport mean to you?
The first word that comes to my head is enjoyment. I think you just see, like, you can go down to a local rugby club on a Sunday and look how many kids are laughing, smiling and mucking around with each other, and you're just like, wow, this is proper enjoyment. So that's the first thing for me that comes to mind. And escapism is probably another one. Being able to escape from your day-to-day life and go out and kick a ball around with your mates, go and do whatever you love doing, whether it's, I don't know, judo or whatever. Being able to go and do that when you want to go and do that is probably a big thing. And then physical and mental health. I think physical health affects your mental health. And the more physically active you can be, it's only going to be beneficial. So sport does that. Well, most sports do that. I guess you can say darts does that, really.
Darts seems to have worked well for you during your self-isolation period.
those sort of three things are the things that I guess come to mind.
Yeah, definitely agree with that. And I think particularly now the escapism side of things is probably heightened more than it ever was before. How important is it in, it kind of follows on from what you've just said, but how important it is in society for people, particularly now, but then have we been guilty in the past, perhaps before we've gotten to this pandemic stage where we've maybe realised just how important it is that we've neglected it in the past? When you think of the price of facilities and things like that, and just giving, namely kids, the opportunity to actually play sport when it's actually quite tough for a lot of them to actually get into it in the first place.
Yeah, I think that's why the Mintry Foundation does such an amazing job, because it does give, I guess a lot of the kids do a little bit of sport, maybe at school, but the Mintry Foundation kind of offers kids who don't have as much opportunity to do those sports to kind of open their eyes to, and there's so many different ambassadors from different sports. So yeah, it takes so many different sports into different areas where kids might not have these opportunities. And if it finds one or two kids a new passion and it's gonna benefit them and benefit their life, then they've done a good job, and it's amazing. So I think sport is such a powerful thing, and I think it, like I said, impacts so many people's lives, whether it be playing a sport or watching a sport. So yes, I mean, as soon as we can have general sports and public sports back, the better. I mean, I'm sure, like I said, if it's affecting people's physical and mental health.
Yeah, definitely. But like, speaking for even from my own personal perspective, just having that opportunity to go out for a run,
yeah,
and you feel so much better once it's done.
Endorphin released.
Exactly, and a whole lot of that frustration that you talked about released at the same time.
I mean, like even sort of golf for me, obviously golf course has been closed now again, and you just like you do just miss it. You just like I'd love today just to go, and well, maybe not today, it's pissing it down, but on another day, just go and with your mates and hit a ball around a course or hack a ball around a course. So yeah, like you even notice it with that. I mean, we're lucky we can play the sport that's our job, but like I just miss other sports as well, and I miss watching sports.
Yeah, exactly. Likewise, the running might take a bit of a break today because of the weather.
Yeah,
but certainly, again, from our perspective, I fence, which is really tough to do with social distancing.
Yep,
because you've got to get close together, and I haven't been able to do it since March, since this whole thing began. And even just opening my kit bag the other day and trying to sort out the stuff that I've got, it's like, well, I'm still not going to be able to use it for another 3-4 months, whoever knows how long this is going to go on for. So yeah, it definitely is, the longing for it just grows with every passing week.
I think that's the same with a lot of people.
Definitely. And on that note as well, because obviously we're all stuck at home, a lot of parents find themselves homeschooling now in the same way. And
losing their minds,
definitely. Certainly speaking to a couple of people that I work with. And I suppose a lot of the focus, again, is probably put on English, maths, physics, those sorts of things, which, you know, parents will rightfully lose their minds over because none of us are experts in that. But again, this comes down to the physical well-being stuff. And for you, is it important that physical education is included in that homeschooling side of things as well and should not be parked to the side?
Yeah. I mean, 100%. I mean, I guess it's probably harder persuading kids to get outside when it's 3 degrees and raining. But like even stuff indoors. I mean, Joe Wicks ran that program, didn't he, in the first lockdown that was a big hit. And just getting your kids involved in stuff like that is massively important, because I mean, it was a bit of an eye opener speaking to a couple of the Mintridge ambassadors who I mentored for a little bit, in terms of when you sort of, especially the age of like 14, 15, 16, and you don't have that sort of curriculum, as you don't have that routine at school where, if you're lucky, you're going to be put into PE and you're going to be able to do your sports and kick a ball around with your mates. You feel like you're stuck indoors, and a lot of kids that age will then just resort to sitting on their phones, playing on their PS4, whatever. So the importance, I guess, for parents of, I mean, not forcing, you never want to force your kids, but just persuading them or finding ways of making that stuff, exercise enjoyable, or yeah, getting them to get outdoors or whatever as much as possible, is really important.
Yeah, I think this is yesterday. I think I saw Anthony Joshua doing a video at King's Langley School.
Yeah.
Just doing like workouts with like backpacks and things like that, just stuff you'd have lying around the house. I suppose, is that something you're always keen to push forwards whenever you can, that you don't have to go out of your way really to get some sort of physical exercise? You can just pick up something in the house and do something for 10 minutes if need be.
Yeah, you can. You don't even need objects. You can do everything. You can do everything bodyweight stuff. Like, there's so many different, I mean, all it takes is a, if you don't really know, it takes a 2-minute search on Google to find some bodyweight circuits or whatever that's going to keep you going and keep you motivated. I'm sure all those videos that are available from athletes doing it are on YouTube and things like that. So, I mean, that's all it takes is probably a couple minutes of research if you don't know already what you're doing to find different ways of keeping active during this lockdown. I mean, especially, I guess, kids, I can't speak for them, but being at school, especially at a young age, I used to love it because you're hanging out with your mates every day and yeah, the lessons and stuff come with it and you're developing yourself there. But I can't, like, being homeschooled, I can imagine where you're getting bogged down with the work and you don't have that freedom of just spending time with your mates becomes really frustrating. So having something, yeah, like we said, that escapism to, like, you go do half an hour of physical exercise or kick a ball around with your parents or do whatever in the garden or inside is massively important.
Definitely. Going forwards, once pandemic is sort of under control, do you think there will be a renewed focus on sport and physical well-being once we're out of it that there wasn't perhaps before?
I hope so. I guess my biggest worry is the fact that so many sports have been shut down for so long that it's going to put people off going back to them. I mean, hopefully people have missed them that much that most people will go back to them, but I'm sure it will have a negative effect on some people. So I do hope there's an emphasis on once things go back to normal. I do hope there's an emphasis on persuading people to get back out there, and I'm hoping there will be as well. I'm hoping people kind of just be fed up of being sat inside and not being able to do very much, and hopefully it'll spark some new interests in new sports.
Yeah, likewise. When you consider, I suppose I've seen more people running through this pandemic than I've ever seen people running before, and yeah. You kind of hope that catches on. People will stick with it more than before. You touched on your role as an ambassador as well for Mintridge and sort of what you've given to the kids that you're mentoring. What has that role taught you?
What's that role taught?
Throw in another difficult one every now and again.
I guess it's helped me learn more about about the power of sport. Sorry. In terms of the effect it has on the people that I've been mentoring. It's also helped me understand more the psyche of a sort of 14, 15 year old lad. Because you kind of become out, I guess, a little bit out of touch with that when you start growing up.
Yeah, it's different to, I think, when we were 14, 15.
Yeah, exactly. And so understanding their sort of mentalities and learning from a lot of the kids have probably had more challenges than I have in my life. So listening and hearing those challenges has also been pretty inspiring, inspired me, I guess. And it's helped made me feel grateful as well for the opportunities that I've had. So they're probably the big things that I've learned.
Yeah, exactly. And in my role as a journalist as well, it's exactly the same thing I see. Stories of inspiration and challenges that some people have had to go through at a particularly young age, see how sport helps them get through that. Mintridge being a fine example of all the good that sport can do. It is very inspiring to see. My final question for you, since you're someone who has just come off the back of some self-isolation periods, do you have, sort of going forward, any top tips that you might want to share for people to get through lockdown 3, or if they do find themselves self-isolating and perhaps trying to make that period a little bit more manageable?
For me, I guess it's different with different people, but for me, I've always been used to routine, coming from school then straight into rugby, which then becomes pretty routine. So for me, having a routine, particularly in the first lockdown, massively helped. Sort of it kept me productive and kept my days going. I wasn't lying in till sort of midday and waking up and having nothing days really. So I think routine is important as much as possible if you're that person who relies on routine. And then just find different, it's an opportunity to, get a hold of your things in life. So admin stuff, get on top of that again. So that's what I've done in this isolation. It's an opportunity to find different things you might be interested in. All it takes is you can do a little bit of research or something that you've potentially been interested in before that you've not been able to kind of get your head down into, is then an opportunity to explore that. And for me, reading, like it's the first lockdown and being in isolation again, reading is something that I've picked up again, that I hadn't really done much of before. So that's been nice. I'm sure people do have different hobbies and can explore new challenges and new hobbies, even if you are stuck within four walls.
Exactly. And get the dartboard out if you haven't already.
Exactly.
Always important. George, thank you so much for coming onto the podcast. Wide range of topics as ever covered, be it lockdown, be it England, be it Saints. But again, thank you for sharing your own personal story, and also a lot of, I think, very important points about A, the power of sport, but also B, how it can help during lockdown at the same time, since we're going to be in this for the next couple of months, probably. There's always something to look forward to. But ultimately, whenever you get back to training, hopefully soon, but also when you finally get to play the next game after a fair few weeks without one, I hope it all goes well and that you enjoy it first and foremost. So thank you so much for coming onto the show.
Thank you very much for having me. It was good.
A huge thank you to George for taking part in our first episode of 2021. And of course, a big thank you to our partners at the Mintridge Foundation for organising this interview. Don't forget, everyone, that you can follow us on social media to find out what we're up to and to get updates on the show. All of our handles are Sportspiel Pod, and we're on Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, and on Instagram. You can also listen to us every Monday night at 10 p.m. on the Bear Internet radio station. Details, as ever, are in the show notes of this episode. We are going to be back in 2 weeks' time with another episode of the podcast. Take care, everyone. Stay safe, and you'll hear from us very soon.